This is strange, right? Yes. Gemma's all confused and mumbled. Well, so am I. It does feel strange. But as I was considering what to talk about, and I wanted to talk about Isaiah 6, where Isaiah sees the Lord, I thought it would be most appropriate to end after that with worship. And so I know it feels strange. We've been almost quiet the whole time, just sitting in our chairs, and people are talking to us. It's very strange. I realized it too when I sat there. I hadn't thought it all through, but the hope is to reflect on the words of Isaiah and then come before the Lord in worship ourselves. Okay. So I would like to read Isaiah 6 to you and then reflect on a few things together, and then we will move and continue to worship also in song. Isaiah 6. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting on a throne, high and lofty, and the hem of his robe filled the temple. Seraphs were in attendance above him. Each had six wings. With two they covered their faces, and with two they covered their legs, and with two they flew. And one called to another and said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory." The doorposts shook at the voice of those who called, and the house filled with smoke. And I said, "Woe is me, I'm doomed, because I'm a man of impure lips, and I live among a people of impure lips. Yet my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts." Then one of the seraphs flew to me, holding a live coal that had been taken from the altar with a pair of tongs. The seraph touched my mouth with it and said, "Now that this has touched your lips, your guilt is removed and your sin is blotted out." Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" And I said, "Here I am, send me." And he said, "Go and say to this people, keep listening, but do not comprehend. Keep looking, but do not understand. Make the mind of this people dull and stop their ears and shut their eyes so that they may not look with their eyes and listen with their ears and comprehend with their minds and turn and be healed." Then I said, "How long, O Lord?" And he said, "Until cities lie waste without inhabitant and houses without people and the land is utterly destroyed, desolate. Until the Lord sends everyone far away, and vast is the emptiness in the midst of the land. Even if a tenth part remain in it, it will be burned again, like a terebinth or an oak whose stump remains standing when it is felled. The holy seed is its stump." So let's pray. Lord our God, King of the universe, as we reflect on these words, will you meet us and speak to us and show us more of who you are? Open our ears to hear, open our eyes to see. In Jesus' name we pray. So, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord seated on a throne high and lifted up, and the hem of his robe filled the temple. I wondered about that first part, in the year that King Uzziah died, especially after our funeral of David Bibben, a leader passes away, and you might feel lost. It might not just have been indicating what time period Isaiah was talking in. It might also indicate the hardship that the land was going through. And actually, when you get all the way to what God is giving as a message to Isaiah, you see that it's not just a politically hard time. where a large empire is about to wash over the land and destroy everything. It's also a spiritually very hard time. That's what we read in the end, when God says to Isaiah, keep listening, but do not comprehend. Keep looking, but do not understand. And then he talks about the cities that will be laid waste without inhabitant. Even if a tenth part remain in it, it will be burned again. And yet there is this holy seed, a holy remainder. And maybe we can start already with Isaiah as that holy remainder. He is the one who actually sees here, right? Instead of keep on seeing, but do not understand. Keep on hearing, but do not know. Here we see Isaiah who sees. And then afterwards we hear about Isaiah who hears. So how does God appear to Isaiah here? As king. Every time we hear about God seated, sitting, it's not just because he wants to relax, it's an image. He is presented here as king, which is so striking when you actually hear about the political difficulties and the spiritual difficulties, right? That he sees the Lord as king. Now, this is striking when you also continue to read, because how can you see his kingship if you do not see it politically or spiritually? And if you continue to read in chapter 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, you actually see that God is working through children. Very striking in Isaiah. It starts with She'ar Yashuv, one of the sons of Isaiah. Then he mentions another son who will be born. His name will be Emmanuel. And another son, Maher Shalal Hashbaz. And another son on whose shoulder will be God's kingdom. Then you have another child in Isaiah 11 that will lead a calf and a lamb together with a predator. Right? So God's kingship will be shown in ways that will be very, very different than you might expect from normal kingship. So we go to the next verse. Seraphs were standing in attendance above him. Each had six wings. With two they covered their faces, and with two they covered their legs, and with two they flew. Different beings, unseen beings. Yes, in our world, if we are very us-focused, it's good to realize that God has more beings than just human beings. Right? They're unseen, and they stand there in attendance, ready to do what he wants. The image from the ancient Near East, you can see a king seated on a throne, and there are always attendants around him, serving him, ready to do his bidding, waiting for his word. And that's what you see here. And their covering shows the difference between these beings and the Lord himself. It reminded me of another place where you have God seated on a throne and you have a council around him. It is in 2 Kings, Micaihu, he was a prophet under Ahab, and he said, I'll read, I saw the Lord sitting on his throne with all the army of heaven, Tzvah HaShamayim, standing beside him to the right and to the left of him. And the Lord said, who will entice Ahab so that he may go up and fall at Ramoth Gilead? Then one said one thing and another said another, and it continues. But here you have a council of beings around the Lord who is seated on the throne. That is what Isaiah is seeing. And this is what they say. They call one to another, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of armies. The whole earth is full of his glory. Very well-known words. But what does it mean, holy? What does it mean when we say, holy is the Lord? What have you been told? What is holiness? Separate, I hear. Divine. Pure. What else? You know, it's hard. It's hard to define holiness. It's very hard. It appears a lot in the Bible, but when you try to put a finger on it, it's very hard. And it's clear that that God is the source of holiness. He is holy. And you can call other things holy, but only because they are in relationship to God. For example, the tabernacle, it's holy. You have the holy place, and then you have the Holy of Holiest. That which most closely characterizes him is called the Holy of Holiest. Then the first time holy is used is of the Sabbath. He makes the Sabbath holy. Or when he appears to Moses in the burning bush, God says to him, take off your shoes because the ground that you're standing on is holy. What does it mean? And I think you're right. It's close to that which is God. This is what characterizes him. If you put it in one word, I mean, it's hard to put God in one word anyway. But it's not love, it's not righteousness, it's not glory, it's not a characteristic of God next to all these others. It is that which characterizes God, and it's not us. I always liked a definition that I read in a commentary on Leviticus by Jacob Milgram. And he said, holiness is this, that which is God and which man is not, but what man is called to emulate and approximate or to reflect. So that which is God, that's holiness. And then he wants that holiness to expand. He wants his character to expand. And that's why he says, I want you to be holy like I am holy in Leviticus. I want you to reflect of my character. So holiness, that word, tries to encapsulate who God is in his glory, in his character, in his love. And that's the word that they're crying out. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. And the next thing they say is the whole earth is full of his glory. And another word that is so easily rolls off the tongue, but it's so hard to say what it is. What is glory? But glory is maybe a little easier than holiness, because glory is what is seen of God's holiness. Holiness is what characterizes God, maybe as a being, but holiness is what we see. When we first hear of the glory of the Lord appearing, it's on Mount Sinai. The mountain shakes, there is smoke, very much to what we will be reading in the next verse. The doorpost shook at the voices of those who called, and the house filled with smoke, very much like Sinai. And then that glory of the Lord comes down on the tabernacle. Later in Kings, we hear of the glory of the Lord coming down on the temple that Solomon had built. So the glory of God is something that is seen of who God is, something visible. But now listen to what they're saying. They say the whole earth is full of his glory. I always struggled with that phrase. Because you have other phrases that will say it in a future tense. The whole earth will be full of the glory of the Lord. Okay, I can see that, you know, because I don't see it. But this is what the seraphs are saying. The whole earth is full of his glory. If I only had the eyes to see, if I could see what the seraphs were seeing, then I would say this whole earth is full of his glory. Despite empires raging, despite a country or countries that are spiritually on their face, despite all the distractions that easily distract my attention and show me how bad things are, despite that, they say, the whole earth is full of his glory. Right? That's different eyes. That is seeing something of God that that I have to learn. Well, that glory of the Lord, of course, also then, I forgot to say, of course, appears on Jesus. And John writes, "And the Word became flesh and tabernacled among us, and we have seen his glory." Right, there it is, the tabernacle where God's presence is and his glory. And I think those who have the eyes to see, they recognize that in Jesus. They said, this is where God's glory is. This is where you can see him. So then we go to the doorposts that shake, the house is filled with smoke. And I said, woe is me, I'm doomed, because I am a man of impure lips and I live among a people of impure lips. Yet my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. He feels completely inadequate. And then the first thing that he says is, my lips are impure. Now, for impurity is something, in English it has a different connotation than in the Bible. In English, you might think about impurity, for example, in gold. Gold can be impure. It has elements in there that make it less pure. Or we think about impurity, especially in relationship to sexual impurity. In the Bible, impurity is a different concept. In Leviticus, for example, that there are only a few things that could make you impure. It is reproductive fluids, also giving birth. It is skin disease, which is a horrible translation because the same word appears also for an issue in houses or an issue in clothing. But that is impure and makes you impure. Death. Touching a dead body makes you impure. So impure, being impure is not a sin. But impurity expands. It's contagious. It's not contagious like a sickness that goes from person to person. It just is contagious from the one who is impure to one other person. It doesn't continue from there. But it is contagious and it's spreading. So it's not a sin to become impure. It is contagious, and in the time period that you are impure, you're not allowed to come to the tabernacle. The thought behind impurity and these few impurities that are mentioned is mortality and death. And in that state that is represented in your body, you cannot come to the tabernacle because the tabernacle is the representation of life. That's part of holiness. Jacob Milgram would say, impurity are the forces of death. Holiness is the force of life. And the two cannot come together. So Isaiah is saying, woe is me, I'm doomed because my lips are impure. My lips do not speak of God as they should, and maybe especially as a prophet. He saw who God is, and he immediately realizes, my mouth doesn't speak about him as it should, which for me is very challenging. I'm a teacher, and I speak about God. And so I can identify with that. Does my mouth speak about God's holiness? about who God really is? Do I see him and then speak about that in such a way that gives glory to him? So that's what he's saying. I'm impure of lips. Now, impurity expands to also other things, but let's leave it at that. I think what he is saying is, I'd love to join this chorus of holy, 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 but I can't. Yeah. So then one of the seraphs, flew to me with a hot coal in his hands that he had taken with tongs from the altar, and he touched my mouth and said, "See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is removed and your sin atoned for." When impurity and holiness come together, normally it means fireworks. Remember Uzzah, who saw the ark almost fall off a cart, and he touched it and he died. Think about the sons of Aaron. When the glory came down on the tabernacle, they decided, oh, let's bring some of our own. And fire came out and consumed them. So when impurity and holiness come together, you have an issue. And here is what God does. He takes care of that issue. And that is the craziest part of impurity, that you would bring this to the tabernacle. So you're not allowed to come in an impure state to the tabernacle, but when, say, you're healed or after a few days and you're dipped in water, then you can bring your impurity in a contained form to the tabernacle. It is in God's presence that actually there is healing and restoration, and that is what Isaiah experiences. So while he is crying out, woe is me, I'm doomed, this is it, life is over, in that presence, God takes care of the issue. That was the sacrificial system in Leviticus, and that is the character of God, that when you bring your stuff to him, he takes care of it in his presence. And in Jesus, we see how much he wants this. He shares his life and his character, his holiness, and it just leaves you in awe. So that's the paradox. You see something of the greatness of God. You realize your own inabilities and your failure to show and speak about God like he really is, and then he comes and takes care of that. And then he said, I heard the voice of the Lord say, who will I send? Who will go for us? And I said, send me. Now, we already read about the harsh announcement that God gives. And it's not the focus of the sermon. What struck me is this holiness and impurity. And how God says, I have a task for you. Yes, you might experience that you have not spoken about me like you should have, but I will take care of that. I will purify your mouth. And now I send you. That is just what struck me. And this is where I think we can respond to him in worship. And as we do so, maybe painfully aware that our lips and our thoughts are impure. They do not reflect the life-giving God or match his life-giving character. But let's ask him to make us pure, to continue to work in us, to heal, to open our eyes more to where He really is, to really see that His glory, that which is visible of His character, is actually visible in the world, the whole world. So we'll continue with worship. As a response to hearing more of His character, more of His greatness, and let's come before Him.
I'll say first, actually I'm going to stop playing for a second, and yeah, please stand up. A friend of mine is here, Michael, and we were talking about worship as I was practicing and getting ready, and we're both in the military, so we communicate pretty effectively. Putting your hands up is the universal sign of what? Surrender. And we were talking about that in worship. Why do we put our hands up? What does it signify? What's our heart position in it? And I have a 5-year-old. And it's also the same way she comes to me and when she puts her hands up, and she's not surrendering, she needs me, or she thinks she needs me. And that's what Isaiah was doing. He was surrendering and then also saying, Abba, this thing I'm seeing, like, there's no way I can go beyond this. There's no way I can stay in this space. I need something also. And so in that surrender, as a good father, he made a way. If my daughter and I are walking somewhere further than her legs can carry her, and she comes up to me with her arms up, I'm going to make a way for her to get there. That's what this point of worship, leading into worship, is. God will make a way for us to know more of Him, to see, to have eyes, to have a mind, to be able to see Him in more of this world around us. That's where my, as He was talking, that's my heart. So.
See you. enthroned in glory, my Savior King. Your loving kindness has welcomed me. Though I'm unworthy of majesty, you wrap the lowly in royalty, and I lay my crowns at your feet. You are holy, holy, and I give my life as an offering.
Offering, you are worthy, so worthy.
at your feet. You are holy, holy, and I give my life as an offering. You are worthy, so worthy,
to him. be in his presence, to be able to worship him, to draw him near to us as we put ourselves aside just to give him glory. But that has to be our motive. That has to be the reason that we're singing. That has to be the reason that we're playing a guitar. It has to be a reason that we're here in as a congregation and assembling. The motive matters. I want to be in his presence and have eyes to see his glory like Nick was talking about. The seraphs could see it. I don't want to just see it to see it. I want to see it so I can magnify him in it. I want to see it so I can tell others about it. I want to see it so it'll change me. Every time I need a coal pressed to my lips to change the way I speak of him, he's worthy of my motive being correct. You, as his sons and daughters, are worthy of my motive being correct. You are worthy of it all. You are worthy of it all. For from you are all things, and to you are all things. You deserve the glory. Caught up in your presence, I'm caught up in your presence. I just want to sit here at your feet, caught up in this holy moment. You never want to leave. I'm not here for blessing. Jesus, you don't owe me anything more than anything that you can do. I just want you. I just want nothing else, nothing else, nothing else will do. I just want nothing else, nothing else, nothing else will do. Caught up in your presence, I just want to sit here at your feet. Caught up in this holy moment,
Jesus, you don't owe me anything more than anything that you can do. I just want you. I just want you. Nothing else. Nothing else. Nothing else will do. I just want you. Nothing else. Nothing else. Nothing else will do.
Be loved.
be one with your spirit, one with your spirit. Teach me to abide in you. And hear your voice all around me, your voice all around me. To be loved is to be loved by you. To be loved is to be loved by you. To be loved is to be loved by you. To be loved is to be loved by you. I won't worry about tomorrow, 'cause all I wanna do, all I wanna do is know you. So I won't worry about tomorrow, 'cause all I wanna do, all I wanna do is know you. I wanna be next to you. Be one with your spirit,
one with your spirit.
Teach me to abide in you. To hear your voice all around me, your voice all around me. Wanna be next to you. I wanna be one Spirit, one with your spirit. Teach me to abide in you. To hear your voice all around me, your voice all around me.
Lord, as we go through this week, let that be our heart cry. We want to find ourselves in your presence. We want to hear your voice. We want to have an opportunity to say yes to you. To hear your voice all around us. As we see people, as we meet people, as we're just going about our lives, hearing you say, go left or go right. To open our mouths or keep our mouths shut.
Oh. May his face shine upon you, be gracious to you, Lord, turn his face toward you, and give you peace.
Shabbat shalom.